You are listening to WRUU Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM and WRUU.org. We are Savannah Soundings, community radio with global soul. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn, and I am so excited to have you with us today. Today, my guest is Wes Chester, and Wes is a devoted husband of 29 years. He's a proud father of three boys. He's a Georgia Southern graduate. He's the owner and trainer of Shady Acres Retrievers. He's a high school baseball, football, and softball umpire. Wes has trained hundreds of dogs from obedience to world-class retrievers. He's the dog whisperer. He's a pack leader. Welcome to the show, Wes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I didn't know I had done all that.
It's an honor to have you here, Wes. Really, I mean, so many things to mention here about you. And the first thing I want to talk about, though, with you, are you able to see me okay? Are you there? Sure. Is my first impression of you. So my first impression of you was I went to the vet. Our dog, our golden doodle, had been having some behavior problems. And our vet said, in so many words, I'm a little concerned about your dog. I've never actually seen a dog react the way he's, you know, reacting towards even me, a very calm doctor. I think you need to see someone. And I said, oh, wow. Okay. And he said, I'll make a few suggestions to you. And he suggested you. So when I called you and got on the phone with you, just by that short conversation with you, you were able to not only diagnose what was wrong with my dog, but the knowledge, the understanding, the passion in your voice. I was ready to just literally sign him over that day to you without even meeting you in person. So that was my first impression of you. Would you tell us a little bit about the story about how you left your career selling construction equipment and transitioned over to training dogs? I'd love to hear that story.
No, I'll be glad to. Mm-hmm. So I have a degree in commercial recreation from Georgia Southern University. At that time, it was Georgia Southern College, mm-hmm. way back in the day. And I've worked several recreation jobs, but I had moved to Atlanta and got into the sales world because that's where the money could be made. Unfortunately, you can't make that kind of money in recreation. I moved up and started selling for Ingersoll Rand, which owned at the time owned Bobcat, which is a piece of construction equipment, a skid steer loader and excavators. And things were booming. I mean, we were selling stuff so fast. I mean, I was up every morning at 5 o'clock and didn't get in bed till late at night. People were buying. We were making money hand over foot. And then, boom, the construction industry blew up. And at that mm-hmm. point in time, we went from just being on fire to being cold as ice. And the company realized that, and they didn't need salesmen at that time. If nobody's buying anything, you don't need salesmen. So they bought us all out and sent us on our way. I took another job for a couple or 3 years, and I got fired from that job. And that's not something that people enjoy saying, but I do. And it's a long story, and I still stand by why I got fired, and I will to the day I die. And I went home to my wife, and I said, babe, I got fired today. And she looked at me with wide eyes, and she said, what are we going to do? And I said, I'm going to start training dogs full time. And she broke down crying, and she said, we'll starve to death. Wow. And we've never looked back. I mean, we started that business, gosh, I'd have to go back and look and see, but it's been 14, 15 years ago, being full-time, doing nothing but training dogs.
Wow.
And it just came natural. Mm-hmm. We didn't advertise. We trained retrievers, and we go to hunt test, mm-hmm. and people see your dogs running, and they see how well-behaved they are, and they see how well they do their job, and then somebody contacts you wanting them to train their dog, and then they want to train their dog. And mm-hmm. it's word of mouth, and I mean, from that point in time, we've never looked back. Now, I have transitioned my business in the last year to a lot of obedience dogs and a lot of just hunting dogs. We don't really run the circuit with the hunt test and field trials anymore. I've been there. Mm-hmm. I've done that. Mm-hmm. I've competed at a very high level. But I'm 59 years old with three boys, and all that travel every single weekend, going here, there. I mean, I've been to New York. I've been to South Texas. I've been to Wisconsin. And it takes a toll on you. It takes a toll on you, and it takes a toll on your family.
Yes.
And you miss a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm just decided that that's not what I want to do anymore. So we're still training dogs, and we're still loving it, but we're just not traveling.
Where was your favorite place to travel to during that time?
Oh, gosh. I don't know that I have a favorite place. It was all so different. The game took me to so many different places that I had never been, that it was fun. It was exciting. And you get the thing about the field trial or the hunt test game, and let me back up a minute. Field trials are dog against dog. They are looking for the best that day. And we didn't run field trials, but most people don't understand what a hunt test is. A hunt test is a game we play where the dog is running against a standard. So he either passes or he fails. And the things that these dogs do are absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. So the hunt test game is a lot of professional trainers, so you knew everybody. And when you got there, I would carry 12 dogs at a time. I would run 12 dogs in a day, and all the other trainers would run 12 dogs in a day. So it got to be like a big family. We were a big family. And when my kids were real little, my wife and kids went with us, and we had a lot of fun. But then as they got older and started in school, and as soon as my youngest started in school, Stacy went back to work. So they weren't with me anymore, and it wasn't as fun. And I just kind of got burnt out on that travel every weekend, living out of a suitcase. Because, frankly, I would leave Friday mornings and drive all day and get there, run dogs all day Saturday, Sunday, get home Monday morning in the wee hours, 1 or 2 o'clock, and then we're right back up again on Monday training dogs.
So did you have time for your own dog at that time? Yes. Or was someone else watching your dog at home?
Have you ever heard the saying, the cobbler's kids never have shoes?
Oh, yes. That's
so
a good one.
Your dogs kind of get put on the back burner because people are paying you to train their dogs and run their dogs, so that's what we spend our time on.
Wow. So now you're doing mostly obedient training?
We do a lot of obedience training. Right. And I will be the first to admit that I have someone that works for me. Her name is Carrie. Mm-hmm. Carrie is wonderful. She was a canine handler in the military. She knows dogs very well. Mm. And she is the backbone of our obedience program. I'll just tell you that right now.
Yes, I work directly with her also, yep, with our dog. And you are so right about that. She's so passionate, and she's just... She's gifted.
She's very gifted
with the dogs. She really
is.
Let me ask you: is it a reflection on you if your dogs don't do well?
Yes and no. If week in and week out, if your dogs don't do well, then I think that is a reflection of your training ability.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, for a dog to have a bad day, no. Did I take it personal? Yes, I did. But no, dogs can have a bad day. And when you go to these different places, you have different judges who set up different tests. I've been to some tests that I thought, man, this is so easy. But then I've been to some tests where I was shaking in my boots wondering if I had a dog on my truck that was going to be able to pass this. Mm-hmm. So yes and no. Mm-hmm. Yes and no.
You credit a lot of your success to the book Water Dog. Correct.
Well, let me say that I credit where I got my beginning.
Oh, okay.
From the book Water Dog.
Please share a little bit about that book too.
Water Dog was a dog written by Walter Richards, and it was one of the first books that told the public how to train. And looking back at that book now, a lot of people still get that book and they read it. And you can get a lot of knowledge from that book, but it's very limited on what it tells you. the things that we know now and the principles that we use to train these dogs are principles from a man named Rex Carr. And Rex really understood dogs and how they worked. So most everybody uses the Rex Carr principles, which is a lot more in depth than Water Dog. But Water Dog will absolutely get you fired up and get you started on that path.
So what would you say to someone who's never had a dog before? Maybe let's just say it's a 25-year-old man, right? He's out on his own. He has his own apartment. He's ready for his own dog. Does he need to do some research ahead of time?
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for asking this question. One of the biggest issues we see with dogs are people choose a breed of dogs based on how the dog looks or my friend has one. And they don't do the research to see what kind of personality does that breed of dog have. There was a movie out, it's been 3 or 4 years ago, and I haven't even seen the movie, but it was about a Belgian Malinois. And those are some of the smartest dogs that there are, but they're canine dogs. And we call them Maligators because they love to bite. And if you just go and get a Belgian Malinois because you saw it on a movie, you don't understand what you got. That thing will tear your house all to pieces. So you need to find the dog that fits your lifestyle. Some people, you know, they love golden retrievers, but golden retrievers are working dogs. And you may have gotten your golden retriever from a pet breeder. But he got the recessive genes from his great-great-great-great-grandma, who's just wide open and fired up and wants to run. And you want him to be a lap dog, and it doesn't work that way.
I would love for you to just share a little bit about what you said to me on the phone that day about my golden doodle and how you broke that down like you just did there.
Sure.
About the two different breeds and what happens when you put those two together. Would you mind sharing a little deeper with us about that? Because it's fascinating.
Because I actually now have a golden doodle.
Oh,
and
cool.
She is a rescue, and she is absolutely great. But the guy who first started breeding goldens and poodles, most people don't realize that poodles are a working dog.
What does that mean exactly?
They were bred to be water retrievers.
Okay.
That's where they started. And you've got a golden retriever that is a working retriever. Now, because poodles were so good and golden retrievers were so good that we have lost their ability to hunt. Because people breed them for their looks and to be calm and to be pets. Now, there's some individuals who have taken both breeds and brought them back. I have a friend up in Atlanta, Rich Louder, who breeds great working poodles. And then you've got guys like Mark Atwater, who is now, he breeds and raises and promotes the working golden retriever. And we have brought them back almost from extinction working. But when you take a working dog like a poodle and a working dog like a golden and you breed them together, if one of those puppies gets the working genes from the mom and the working genes from the dad, now you've got a dog that is not suitable to sit on your couch all day.
Oh, and have a pretty haircut.
I mean, he's going to be fired up. He's going to need that extra attention. He's going to need that stimulation of his mind. He's going to need that running and chasing that tennis ball. Because let me promise you this, that dog that's got that energy is going to find a way to get rid of that energy, whether it's chewing on your new purse or the corner of your couch. He's going to find a way to get rid of that energy. So,
And when do you see that in the litter of puppies? When does that show itself, the temperament?
You can see that right away. We just this past Saturday sent home a litter of golden retrievers. And the way I do my litters is the way I buy puppies. If I'm going to buy a puppy, I decide which litter I want it from based on the mom and the dad. And then I call the person who's breeding the litter and I say, listen, this is what I'm looking for. I want this, 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 and this. You see them every day. I can't come to your house and in 2 hours see their personalities. So you pick out the dog for me, tell me when it's time to come get it, and I will come and get it. Wow. And that's the exact way I did this litter of golden retrievers. Are they going to be good pets? Yes, they will. Are they going to be good hunting dogs? Yeah, absolutely. Mom and dad are both hunting dogs. But we had some people who wanted pets, and then I had some people who wanted hunting dogs. So I watch this litter from the day they're born until the day they go home.
Okay.
And you can see their personalities. I can see the ones that maybe are not as aggressive. That's the ones we push to the pet homes. The ones that are fighting all the time, that go off by themselves, that are, you know, dragging the toys and playing, those are the ones that we push to the hunting, the people that want a hunting dog. So you can see that quite early.
So I feel like so many people are going into this blindly.
Absolutely, they are.
And in the old days, Wes, they had pet stores, which yes. I don't believe they have anymore. I've never seen one around here. I mean, up north we had them, but
yeah, I used to see them in the mall
all the time. And now that's gone.
And see, they knew that's what sold dogs.
Yes.
People would walk by and they'd see that little cute dog there, and
sure.
they have no clue where that dog came from, no. Who his parents are, nothing. So people are going into pet ownership blindly. Yeah, that's a great analogy right there.
So what are your thoughts on adopting a dog from a shelter then, since you just have no idea about this specific breed and where it came from or anything like that? Is that, again, going in blindly?
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Because the people that work at those shelters, again, see those dogs
okay.
every single day.
Oh.
Before we moved back to Statesboro, I had a girl who worked for me named Crystal. Crystal now runs the Humane Society in Madison, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And her social media is just slap full of the dogs from the Humane Society. And she will tell you and show you their personality. And, you know, if it's an older man and woman who are just looking for a companion dog, she can point you in the right direction. If it's a young guy who is an adventurer and he's hiking, and they can point you to this dog over here. So that's a great place to find dogs.
I never thought about that before, that they're almost specialists in this area.
Absolutely.
Right? Like the breeders and the people at the shelter, because like you said, they're spending so much time with these dogs.
Absolutely.
And they know what to look for.
Correct.
So for people out there that maybe didn't have that experience and they just jumped into something, right? Oh, my neighbor had puppies. Do you want one? Sure. And then you take it home. And then all of a sudden you realize that the dog is just not happy. Right? The dog is showing signs of aggression in some way, or just like you said, chewing everything. So what do you do at that point then? Is that something you should take into your own hands and get a book and figure it out, or find a trainer?
Well, you can YouTube, you can go to ChatGPT, you can go everywhere, and you're going to find so many opinions mm-hmm. on what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I would recommend that you find not one, 2, 3, 4 trainers and go and talk to them. See what they say. See, they may all give you something different to do
mm-hmm.
because there's more than one way to skin a cat.
Mm.
But again, you've got to be willing to make the sacrifice if you're going to keep that dog to do what that dog needs to get him to where he needs to be. And a lot of times it's a tough decision, but people will make the decision to give the dog up mm. and find it a more suitable home, because now the dog's happier and you're happier, and we will find you what you're looking for based on what your needs and what you want. But you just can't go out and just buy a dog. And you know, that's why all these rescues are here, especially the purebred rescues. You know, we're members of the Boykin Spaniel Rescue, and the Boykin Spaniel is a dog that was bred right here in South Carolina, and they're little brown, and they got these little ringlets in their ears, and they're just beautiful dogs. And gentlemen know that they can make their wife happy by buying them a Boykin Spaniel. So now all these breeders are breeding all these Boykin Spaniels for the wrong reasons, and they're selling to these people, and then the dog is a maniac. I mean, he is a field working retriever. He wants to be outside and run. And when that doesn't fit into your you know, 9-to-5 lifestyle, you can't keep him in a kennel all day long and come home, and then you just want him to sit on the couch with you. When you let him out, he's like the Tasmanian devil. Mm-hmm. That's not good for the dog, and it's not good for you. So what happens is they turn him into rescue. And then rescue is now faced with trying to find that dog a home. So, you know, just do your research. And I will be the first to say, as a professional working in the canine industry, we don't do enough to advertise that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the magazines, the we need to let people know, I'm not going to charge you a dime. If you're looking for a dog, call me. I will walk you through it. I'll talk to you. I want this to be a good experience for you, just like when we're training. You know, what makes our program successful is, and it's kind of a behind-the-scenes thing, but I'll tell you, 20% is training the dog. The 80% is training the owner.
I love that so much.
You know,
yes, you've got to be, talk to us more about that.
You've got to be committed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can train the dog and I can have authority over the dog, but I can't give that to you. You have to take that. And once the dog understands that you know what the trainer knows, you're rocking and rolling. There's no problem after that.
And when you say that, does that mean that the owner has to stand behind their word with the dog, just like they would with a child?
Absolutely.
Right? And otherwise the dog is confused.
Christy, I tell people all the time that dogs are just like humans.
Mm-hmm.
We have dogs that love to work. We have dogs that are lazy as they can be.
Mm-hmm.
We have dogs that will do anything you ask them to do. We have dogs that are so opportunistic, the time you turn your head, they're going to do the wrong thing. We have dogs that are easy to correct. We have dogs that take a little more correction before they understand it, you know, so they're just like humans. So, yes, we want you to train with us so you see what we're doing, how we're doing it, because when you take this dog home, the standard has to be the same at home as it is with us, you know, just like our kids. It works opposite with kids, though, because, you know, your kids go somewhere to spend the night and the parents call and say, man, he was so nice. He was such a gentleman. Well, why doesn't he act like that at home?
Yes, you know? You always hear that. Wow, you were so good for the other people. You never say stuff like
that's
that at
right.
home.
So, that's yes, funny. We want mm-hmm. the owners, you know, to be as committed to this. And listen, it doesn't happen. We have owners that drop the dog off. They want to pick it up and think it's a remote control car. You know, mm-hmm. I just push this button and he does this and I push it. And it's that doesn't happen. Dogs are living, breathing, thinking animals. And when you really get into the high level of training and you watch these dogs problem solve and do what they need to do to get to where they need to go, it is absolutely incredible. I personally think we have only scratched the surface of what dogs can do for us. You know, we have dogs now that can detect cancer. We have dogs that, you know when an epileptic seizure is coming. It's incredible what these dogs can do.
It is. So what's our role as the owner then? What should we be doing with our dog?
We should be loving that dog. We should be playing with that dog.
Mm.
But at the same time, we should also uphold the standards and the discipline that, you know, was set in the training process. Sometimes, and one of the worst words that we hear as trainers and dog professionals is, this is my fur baby. This is my fur baby.
Okay.
You know, I get it. I love my dogs. You won't find anybody that loves their dogs more than me.
I know, I can tell you do.
But mm-hmm. it's a dog.
Mm-hmm.
It's not my child.
Right.
It's a dog. It's not my child. And when but the dog can sense how you feel about it. If he knows he can get away with it, he's going to get away with it. There's no dumb dogs. Mm. I promise you there is no dumb dogs. There's some that are smarter than the others, but there are no dumb dogs. They're very opportunistic, and they will do whatever they can get away with.
Would you also say that they can sense your fear?
Yes.
If you're afraid to discipline them or afraid to...
Absolutely.
Okay.
They, so, you know, when you're at these tests with these dogs, if you're nervous, if your mannerisms are different then when you are training, absolutely they can tell that. They can, you know, you want to be as relaxed as you were when you were at home running this dog, when you're standing at the line and there's 100 people watching and, you know, this is a mm-hmm. test. And, they can absolutely, you know, it's like, it amazes me, these service animals that detect epileptic episodes.
Wow.
And they video that. And here's a person standing at the kitchen sink making a sandwich, and that dog comes and alerts them that I don't know if he smells it.
He probably smells some kind of sweat or something, probably.
But he alerts that person, wow. And that person goes and sits down or gets on the couch or goes and lays down on the bed, and sure enough, it's not long. Here comes an epileptic seizure. Wow. So they feel that. They can sense that.
It's incredible.
It is.
I read online somebody, one of the dogs that you trained, you posted something. The little girl said this quote unquote, "Mommy, he's not jumping on me anymore." To me, that's worth every penny of the training, by the way.
Well, let me tell you about jumping.
Yes.
Just having raised a litter of puppies, mm-hmm. that's how puppies play with each other.
Mm.
They jump on each other. Mm-hmm. They wrestle. They, you know, they just roughhouse. That's how they socialize. That's... Mm-hmm. So probably, you know, 15, 20 years ago, at 6 weeks of age, we sent puppies home. Well, what we've learned is in between that 6 and 8 week period, that extra 2 week period, those dogs really learn social skills from each other in the litter. So we now hold these dogs until they're 8 weeks old.
Okay.
So when you take that dog home, you have now taken away his social structure. So now you are his social structure. And he's going to jump on you, and he's going to bite you, play bite you. And that's not fun, especially in a large breed dog. So we have to teach that dog now that I'm not your brother or sister, and we still love you, and we're going to give you affection and attention, but you keep all 4 feet on the floor, because that's now you can hurt somebody really bad, especially children mm-hmm. and older people. Mm-hmm. We see that a lot. You know, you have... Maybe somebody lost their husband or wife late in age, and they want a dog now to be that companion, and that's great. I love that. But if that dog jumps on that person, that's not a good situation. So we're just restructuring that behavior to be a good family member. And that's what people ask all the time when they ask us about our obedience program. We really only teach 4 commands.
Mm.
Hear, you know, come when I call you. Sit, and that means stay. We don't say stay anymore, because why would I ask you to sit if I didn't want you to stay? Heel, which means walk with me on a leash. Don't pull me. Don't make me pull you. And then down, lay down. And from those 4 commands, we can teach that dog to be a family member. We want you to be a family member, but you have to. We don't let our kids just act like that, so why would we let our dog act like that?
Right. And those 4 commands really changed my life, really. So thank you for that.
No, you're welcome.
We dropped Lewis off with you for a few months last summer, and just he is a completely different dog, which changes the energy in our home. Because
sure it does.
We have a calm, peaceful home, and I want it to be that way. And I know that he wants it to be that way. He's a wonderful dog. We're so fortunate that our son is 10. I know you also have a 9-year-old son too, right?
Yep, that's correct.
And thank God for that, because that's Lewis's built-in best buddy.
That's
you know,
right.
I mean, he gets that energy release when his buddy gets home from school,
that's
and
right.
Of course we go to the field. And so, yes, those 4 commands have really changed a lot of things. And I don't think I could have learned that from a YouTube video. I don't think so.
Well, you can learn that from a YouTube video, but what I tell people all the time is, that standard that you set has to be applied everywhere you go. And in our environment, we train, we teach the dog by himself. Then we go and we take him inside the kennel. We have an apartment in the kennel, and we make him do those same things inside, just like he was in your house. Then we walk in the kennel, and there's dogs are just barking, and mm-hmm. that standard is the same. If I say sit, you sit. These dogs are barking. So we're able to put that dog in a lot of different situations to make him understand that sit means sit. And there's actually a company, it's a commercial company that trains dogs, and that's the name of their company. Sit means sit.
That's really good. I love that. That's awesome.
But it's, you know, it's just us being able to put that dog in different situations. And it's nothing for us to load the dogs up and take them to Lowe's. You know, we walk around the store and, you know, the standard is the same. Mm-hmm. We're not at the kennel anymore, but the standard is the same.
Right. So what would you recommend for a couple right now, right, that's having a baby?
Okay.
But they also would like to have a dog, right, to raise the baby with a dog in the home. Where would they start with something like that? Or is that even a good idea?
No, well, I'm not going to say it's a bad idea, but I would probably wait until that baby is at least a year old and mm-hmm. can walk. Then when you bring a puppy in or you bring a dog in, you know, your dogs are funny with babies. You know, if you've got that dog and he has become a member of your family and then you bring a baby in, how is he going to react to that? You know, sometimes dogs, he feels like you're now invading his territory. But I would probably say wait until that child can at least walk before you introduced a dog. Okay. And I would probably introduce a younger dog if you have time, because puppies are very time consuming. Now you got to house train him and, you know, that kind of stuff. And you got a newborn. Newborns or babies are very time consuming. So I would wait a little while. I don't think I would want to do both at the same time.
Okay. And then what about if a couple already had a dog mm-hmm. and then the first child is coming home from the hospital? How is there a whole a format of introducing the dog to the baby at that point?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you had to do that yourself with your kids? Or
yes.
Okay.
And we had Labrador Retrievers, and we have a little Shih Tzu, and he has little man syndrome. He thinks he's rules the world, but he really doesn't. Uh-huh. But, you know, when you bring that baby in, I would not put it close to the dog to begin with, because the dog's going to be very inquisitive. Let him hear, let him smell, let him see you taking the baby here or there before I really held him down to let the dog see it, smell it. You've got to go slow. Mm-hmm. You don't want to overwhelm him, because you never know what's going to happen. You don't know how that dog's going to react. He's an animal. He's a wild animal that we domesticated. And again, genes can be recessive, and you don't know what you're getting. You know, pit bulls, people have a love and hate relationship with pit bulls. You don't ever see a pit bull under 2 years old that's aggressive. They're not usually aggressive until they're two. And the Orthopedic Foundation for Animals does not consider a dog full grown until they're two. Mm. So now when they're two, he starts to understand what he's been bred to do for thousands of years. And pit bulls are working dogs. They work cattle. They work hogs. They catch things. I mean, that's what they do. And then when that dog gets two and he gets out of your house or out of your fence and a kid's riding a bike down the road, that natural instinct of what he's been bred to do for thousands of years kicks in. I don't think the dogs are not, they don't have anything personal against the people that they attack. That's just what they've been bred to do. And that's what they do.
I'm so glad you shared that. I feel like this is just another conversation that we need to have more often. You know, these conversations just have to happen.
It's tough.
Yes.
Because I know some really nice pit bulls.
They're sure. Great. I do too.
But if you gave them the opportunity, they just, you know, I've got a new puppy that we bought. She's probably 18, 20 weeks old now. Mm-hmm. And she is a pointer. Mm-hmm. She points birds. No training whatsoever. You can put a bird down, and when she smells that bird, she's going to stop and point it. That's what she's been bred to do for thousands and thousands of years. Genetics matter. Mm. So you can't take that out. I had a lady call one time and she said, hey, I need some help. I can't keep my dog in my yard. Well, ma'am, what kind of dog is it? He's a tree and coon hound. Ma'am, do you understand? For thousands of years, they have been bred to run in the woods as fast as they can and hunt coons. He's not going to stay in your yard. Get a fence. Did or you, get a big fence.
Was she surprised to hear that?
Yes.
Because she probably had no idea.
No clue.
Interesting.
No clue.
I had no idea either. I had no idea. May I ask you about Chihuahuas? Because we have a Chihuahua.
Okay.
What do they need? What are they bred to do?
Bite. I take that back. I shouldn't say it.
She doesn't bite you. She's an older Chihuahua, but she's has that same little man syndrome.
Yeah.
You know,
all these little dogs do.
She's the boss.
And that's why I tell people all the time, mm-hmm. I will only train your dog if it can bite me above my ankle. That's what I usually
tell
people.
That's a good
gauge.
I like
that. But no,
that.
You know what? Those dogs are just as smart as big dogs.
Okay.
Absolutely. Carrie trained a dog that was a mini Pomeranian.
Oh, my.
This dog was over a year old, and it weighed 2 pounds.
Wow.
It was tiny. And that dog was just as smart, trained it just like you do a big dog, held it to the same standards, and it was a great, great dog.
I know a lot of people that have small dogs that use those pee pads, for lack of a better word, instead of actually walking the dog outside.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
are your thoughts on
no,
that?
No, I think that's a terrible idea, because what you're doing, you're teaching the dog to pee in the house. Yeah, that's exactly what you're doing.
You're right.
So one day, if the pee pad's not there, what's he going to do? He's going to find a place and pee in the house.
Sure, you've already encouraged him and taught
Absolutely.
Him that this was acceptable.
Yes. Now, if I could make a suggestion to everybody, and I know you can't do it sometimes, but we have a doggy door. And even my cat uses the doggy door. And they learn so quickly to go outside to use the bathroom. A dog would rather use the bathroom outside. He would rather.
Of course.
And if he has a way to get out there and do that by himself, he's going to do that. So doggy door is the easiest. But if not, people ask me about potty training puppies. Again, you need to take that dog out every 15 minutes if you can.
I love this. This is great advice right here, the 15 minutes.
And if he's asleep and wakes up, you better take him out right now. Puppies have small bladders. By the time they're 6 months old, they should be able to sleep through the night. Some of them don't, some of them do. But they have small bladders, and they would rather go outside. Now, from the day you bring this puppy home, if you will get you a long piece of string and a bell and hang it on the door you take the dog out on. Hang it by the doorknob. And every time you take the dog out, I mean that long piece of string now, so it hangs down by the floor. Every time you take the dog out, stop, take his paw, ring the bell, take him outside. He don't have a clue what you're doing. But over a week or so, you're going to hear that bell ring, and you're going to look, and your dog's going to be standing by the door asking you to go outside.
Okay, so what if I don't have a puppy, but I have a almost 2-year-old dog? Can I still teach him to
Absolutely
do?
Absolutely, you
it's
can.
It's never too late to bring
never
this in.
Too
this
late.
Is a great idea.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Nope, he learns. I'm telling you, they're opportunistic. They learn the routine.
Yes, and I think there's something to be said for education too, for the dog. The dog really enjoys the learning. Like you said, they're smart. They want more.
We had a Jack Russell one time. Her name was Maggie. And we had all these toys for Maggie. She had stuffed animals and bones. And I taught Maggie the name of every toy. And you could put them in a pile and tell her which one to go get. And she would search through that pile till she found that one and bring it back to you.
And that was fun for her?
Oh, yeah. You're stimulating her mind.
Yes.
Again, these are animals. They want to learn. They want to play games. They're smart enough to do it, and they can do it.
Would you say they also want new places to sniff?
Oh,
right?
Gosh.
You can't take them around the same block all the time, right?
Listen, a dog's nose is so. I'll tell you this story real quick. A lady called us from a neighboring community, And she said, listen, I've got these two black labs. I can't get rid of them. They're puppies. When I say puppies, they were probably 7, 8 months old. She said, you can have them if you want them. So Carrie went and got them, and she brought them to the kennel. And we'll train them a little bit. We can find them a home. The male, great dog. We did some training on him. We sold him to a hunting place, and they hunt him all the time. But the female, she was having some issues. And Carrie, one day, she said, Wes, I think this dog is blind. And you know, she was blind as a bat.
Really?
But she used her nose, and she could navigate her area in the kennel. She never ran into the fence. She knew exactly where her house was. You could throw her a bumper short distances, and she could hear it. And she would run to where she heard it and then use her nose to find it and pick it up, and she would bring it back to you. We gave her to a beautiful, nice couple out of Bluffton, South Carolina. They took her to a doggy eye specialist, and he said, yeah, absolutely. I know exactly what she's got. And they operated on her, and it cost them thousands of dollars. And this dog can now see some.
Wow.
She doesn't see like a regular dog. But no, they use that nose. I mean, that's what God gave it to them for. And they will smell. You know, we tell people all the time, you walk in your mom's house and you go, hey, mom, you're baking a cake. That dog walks in there and he goes, I smell milk. I smell sugar. I smell flour. I smell vanilla extract. I mean, he smells it all. Where you just smell a cake, he can smell every ingredient in there.
Really?
Sure, absolutely. He can differentiate between all of those smells.
So can a dog always find his way home if he gets away?
I don't. You know, you hear those stories.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Mm.
I don't know.
Or is there like a radius of space?
I think he has to be familiar with his surroundings.
Okay.
Before he really knows. You know, a lot of the guys that deer hunt with dogs, the dogs will get away and they lose them from wherever they're at in the swamp. But they've learned that if they'll take one of their jackets or a shirt and lay it down, if that dog happens to come back by there and smells that, then he's probably going to stay right there. You just go check there every day and you'll find your dog laying beside your coat or your that smell. That's a familiar smell to him. And he understands, well, he's around here somewhere.
And he'll stay there and wait?
They find a lot of them that way.
Oh, that's brilliant. So beautiful, too.
But the easiest way to find your dogs like that is from the time they're puppies. Every time you go to feed them, you stop by the truck and blow the horn. And then you go feed the dogs. The next day, you blow the horn and you feed the dogs. So over a period of a few weeks, what's that horn mean?
Time to eat.
Time to eat.
Right.
You lose your dog, you walk out there in the woods, and you start blowing your truck horn.
And they'll come.
He can hear that. Hey, I hear the horn. It's time to eat. Let me go find that horn.
Wow. Well, this is nice that you live out in Statesboro, so you're able to just let them free that way. Do you let them
run? No, we do not.
Oh, you don't?
No.
Okay.
Deer hunting with dogs is a sport that's very old. They still do it in places on the coast because it's so swampy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get in there to hunt them any other way. And deer will overpopulate themselves quickly. Most people don't realize that Georgia kills half their deer population every year because every doe usually has twins every year. Sometimes they'll have triplets.
Really?
Yes, and they will overpopulate. The insurance companies hate them because they pay out so much money for a car. So it's an effective method to keep the deer population in check hunting with dogs. But Georgia has passed some laws that you have to have your name, address, and phone number on a collar of every deer dog in case it gets lost. Somebody that finds it can call you.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have a certain amount of property to run these dogs on so they are not disturbing neighbors. You know, so I'm not sure what that number is, 1,500, 1,800 acres. So, but they still use them just like, you know, they did in England. You always, people are against deer hunting with dogs, but you always see the pictures of fox hunts and there. It was a whole day celebration.
Absolutely.
They dressed up and had picnics and released the hounds. And here's 100 fox hounds and they're chasing foxes. That's just what they did.
Oh, yeah. It's a prestigious, what's the word? Prestigious? something like
prestigious.
That.
Prestigious.
Prestigious, thank you. Event. Yes, it is. It's probably, I'm sure it is, still in lots of the country. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want you to answer this question.
Okay.
What are your feelings about dog parks?
Okay.
Okay, hang tight, everybody.
You're listening to your radio station, WRUU, which is presented by people just like you, people from your community. The voices you hear are your neighbors, coworkers, and other Savannah residents. Therefore, WRUU is your community radio station. So, won't you please help by donating whatever you can afford to help your neighbors stay on the air? Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station with a monetary contribution of any amount. Again, you can support your local radio station at WRUU.org. Thank you.
The Flannery O'Connor Childhood Home is kicking off the spooky season with its third annual candlelight reading at the Old Dairy, 2500 Tennessee Avenue, Savannah, on Sunday, September 28th at 7 p.m. Hear Moon River Opera perform haunting arias as the sun sets before settling in to listen to one of Flannery O'Connor's darkest stories. This event is without charge and open to the public. Please bring blankets and lawn chairs to be comfortable. The First Friday for Folk Music Concert on Friday, October 3rd, starting at 7:30 p.m., features two sets with award-winning folk songwriter Karen Oliver from Fort Worth, Texas. Her original, authentic, and compelling songs reach deep into your heart. The concert is at the First Presbyterian Church, Stewart Hall, 520 Washington Avenue, Savannah. More information can be found at savannahfolk.org.
Hi, I'm Tim, the host of a show called Not Fade Away here on WRUU. Do you like the feeling of, oh wow, I love this song and I haven't heard it in forever? Then join me on Friday afternoons from 1 to 2 p.m. I play forgotten hits and songs that were good enough to have been hits but never made it. Let's keep great music alive together. Not Fade Away, Fridays at 1 p.m. here on WRUU.
Welcome back to Parenting Room 101. I'm your host, Christy Sanborn. Thank you for joining us today. Wes is bringing so much incredible insight today to the show, and I know that you're getting so much value out of this. I'm definitely going to go back and listen to the show again. I have so much more to learn. I am a cat person, by the way. I hope that doesn't offend you, Wes.
You know, I've never been a cat person. I've always been allergic to cats.
Oh.
Even to the point where we would go to the Barnum and Bailey Circus, and they would bring the tigers or the lions in, and my eyes would just swell up. And I mean, but I learned that as you get older, that goes away. And my son, my oldest son, brought home a kitten one day.
Oh.
And literally, it took us about a month, and now that cat does not bother any of us. His name is Kirby. And we love Kirby to death until last week. My wife got up, got ready for school, and she started screaming. And I went in, and Kirby had brought in a squirrel.
A live squirrel?
Well, it wasn't live at this point in time because our golden doodle had it in its mouth, the tail hanging out one
side. Oh, boy.
But it's nothing to get up and, because he uses the doggy door. He can go and come as he wants.
Sure.
You know, cats, domestic cats, kill more birds in America than any hunters could ever think
of. I have heard this, and it's heartbreaking.
So we'll get up in one morning, and there may be red bird feathers all over the living room. But I love Kirby. We love cats now, so we don't mind cats.
So let's talk about the dog parks.
Okay.
What are your feelings? And go ahead and be honest.
I would never take my dog to a dog park. And in all the traveling that I do, you know, you would stop at the big fuel stations, and they've always got that little area for your dog to run. I never put my dog in there because a lot of diseases are transmitted through the soil. Parvo can live for up to a year in the soil, and all your dog's got to do is run through there and get it on his feet and lick his feet. Now your dog has parvo. There are so many diseases in that soil that I would never take my dog there, even if he's vaccinated. Now, we have a dog park in Statesboro, and if they would build these dog parks with this in mind, so that once a week, twice a week, someone could go out and spray that dog park, because we spray our kennel every day with a product called Witsy Wash, and it is a chlorine-based product. The chlorine in it is not strong enough to hurt the dogs, but it kills any kind of bacteria or viruses. So we spray our kennel with it every day. So, you know, dog parks, that's the first element of a dog park, is the diseases your dogs can pick up. Mm-hmm. The second is, mm-hmm. you never know when somebody else has got a dog that's going to jump on your dog. Mm-hmm. You know, let's go have a play date mm-hmm. at the dog park. Well, somebody over there's got a dog that's dog aggressive, and now you're in a fight. And it's not fun breaking up dog fights, I can tell you.
No. Well, we stopped going ever since you suggested that. And now we just go to this nice field near yep. our house where the dogs are walking by us
sure.
so that my dog is able to interact a little bit. But yep. do you think that dogs need to interact with each
sure,
other, though?
Sure. They enjoy interacting with each other.
But not in that space.
Right. And it's about the confined space. That's the problem.
Oh.
You know, that it's just that that's an area where... how many hundreds of dogs are in it every week? Mm-hmm. And you know nothing about them. Have they got their rabies shot? Do they have their Bordetella kennel cough shot? Are they got parvo, hookworms, roundworms? All that stuff can be picked up from the soil.
Oh, my goodness. And then you're bringing that home. That's yep. scary.
Yep.
One of the main reasons I stopped bringing my dog, even before you and I had this conversation about the dangers of the dog park, was I heard rumors here in Savannah that people just drop their dog off at the dog park and come back later. I mean, they're not even there. That's that to me, that was enough. I'm like, you know what? I'm not taking any chances with mine.
I don't put anything past someone doing it this day and time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's just not a good idea.
Not a good idea.
Yes. So we're not doing it. I'd love to, I know you have three kids.
Yes.
Would you tell us, if your kids had to describe you personally in three words, what would those three words be?
Oh, gosh. Angry. Disciplinarian.
Mm-hmm.
Loving.
Mm.
I got three boys. So, I don't know if I told you this. Our first two boys are IVF.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes.
That's beautiful.
So, we tried forever to get pregnant, and we couldn't. So, we go to the doctor for help, and the doctor says, you know what? I don't know why you can't get pregnant, but I can take a sperm and an egg, put them together in a petri dish. We fertilize it. We put it back in. You have a really good chance of having a baby. So, the first time we did it, we chose to reinsert two fertilized eggs. One of them took. We had Tucker. That was our oldest. 3 years later, we did it again. We inserted two eggs. One of them took. We had Tate. Two boys. Our family is complete. No problem. When I'm 49 years old.
Oh, my God. This is so beautiful. It's okay. No, it's beautiful.
It's emotional.
I'm so glad you're sharing this. Thank you.
My wife sent me a text. And it was a picture of a pregnancy test.
Oh, my God.
And it was positive. I text back and I said, wow, who's pregnant? Then she sent me another text of a picture of two pregnancy tests. And I knew at that point in time that it was her.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It's so beautiful.
So we have three boys. Two were planned. One was not planned. And it's probably been one of the greatest experiences of our life when people found out, because Stacy was 40. I was 49.
Wow.
Or she was 40. I'm 6 years older than she was. So she was 43. And people would get, wow, what are y'all going to do? You're pregnant. You're 43. What do you mean? What am I going to do?
That's a no-brainer.
God gave us a child. Yes. You know, we're going to raise this child just like we would anybody.
Wow.
But.
Wow.
So two of our kids are IVF, and one of them was just natural, boom, wham, bam, thank you, man, you're pregnant.
Wow.
So we have three boys.
So beautiful, and, really.
You know, because when we were going through the IVF thing, we saw so many people that were so disappointed because they still couldn't get pregnant, even with IVF, and spending tens of thousands of dollars. And it just broke our heart to see that. And we didn't have a problem with it. It was just, it happened for us. So to be able to get pregnant naturally was something we didn't think could happen. But guess what? God had other plans. Yeah. So we got boys.
Yes.
And boys. And you know what? When we found out we were pregnant, people said, oh, what do you want a boy or girl? And, you know, it would have been cool to have a girl. But we didn't know girls. Mm-hmm. We didn't have any girl stuff. We knew boys, so God gave us another boy. And, you know, boys are, I guess they're different than girls. Girl moms may tell me otherwise, but these boys are just boys, and sometimes they need that discipline. You know, I told one of them this morning, I said, hey, you knew the rules, you just chose to break them, and these are the consequences. So you choose wiser next time. But they're good kids. My oldest, Tucker, is in the engineering program at Georgia Southern. I mean, he was a straight-A student in high school, never brought a book home to study. Now he's in the engineering program, and he's like, whew, it's tough. Wow. Doing well. My second one, Colby, is a senior in high school. Mm-hmm. Never seen him bring a book home to study. Makes really good grades. Wow. Third one is Tate. He's got two older brothers that beat up on him all the time. Yeah, so Tate's Tate.
Wow, that's so beautiful. It's hard with the boy. I have one of each, so I'm very blessed. Okay. And I will agree with you. I'm a very different parent with both kids because they need different things. Even this morning in the kitchen, Wes, like my son was playing with these magnets that he likes to play with. And I mean, we have hardwood floors and we have a wood table in our kitchen. So everything is very loud, I feel like, with boys. That's and right. That's something people don't really talk about enough, is that if you're looking for a peaceful, quiet little house with flowers and classical music playing, well, that's most likely you don't have a little boy running around. You just...
Correct.
It's just something you just have to get used to. And now I lean into the noise. You know, I embrace the noise that he brings because it is loud. He's dropping these magnets all over the floor. It's so loud. He listens to the TV so loud. He's stomping through the house in the morning when he gets up. And I love that. And I love that he feels comfortable to be loud. And it's okay.
Well, it is okay. And, you know, I remind myself and I remind my wife also that, you know, it's not going to be very long.
No.
And it's going to be very quiet in here.
Oh, my goodness. Right. Are you wishing for that? Because I'm not.
There's going to be no clothes on the floor to pick up.
Right. Or bedtime story to read or any of those things.
And is that still aggravating right now? Yes, it is. It's still very aggravating. And she gets so aggravated about it. And I get it. You know, look, kid, you're older. You're 9 years old. Put your stuff away.
Right.
Put your stuff away.
You know what I do, too, is... I like to give options, especially with my son. I'll say, you know, there's a pile of clean laundry on top of your dresser. Would you like to put it away before school or after?
Right.
It's a no-brainer, Wes. It's going to be done. Right. But that's how I approach that. Correct. I'm already assuming that he's going to take responsibility. See, that there's that. Yep. But that translates to trust. I trust that you are capable, right? So now it's just a question of when would you like to do it? Sure. So there's still options.
He feels like he's getting an option, too.
He is.
He's going to do it, but...
I'll give him that little bit of space to decide on his own when he will do it, and then he commits to that.
Sure.
Because he'll say, oh, I'll do it after school. And I'll say, okay, well, what time? 3:30? Yes, 3:30. Perfect. And guess what happens? 3:30 comes around. I'm pointing at his room. All right, Mom, all right. And they can roll his eyes and all that. And he does, and that's fine too. But we have that understanding, right? You keep your word, I keep mine. You have your responsibilities, I have mine. And then together we're healthy, right? And now we have a dog that behaves, thank God. Well, this has been so, so wonderful. And thank you for sharing all that you did today.
Sure.
Is there a place online where people can find you if they would like to get some training done here in Savannah? Or even if they're coming from out of town, how would be the best way to approach that, with you?
The easiest and best way is you can find us on Facebook.
Okay.
We post a lot of pictures, you know, stuff that's going on there, Shady Acres Retrievers. Shady Acres Retrievers. We do have a website, but that's not as updated. You know, it takes a little more time to do that, and I'm kind of lazy about that. So, you know, Facebook is a great place because you can interact with us. You can send me a message, and I'll see that right away, and I can respond to it.
Perfect. Well, I highly recommend anyone who's in need of some training. And I talk about you all the time. I'm always telling people because people compliment my dog. And I'm like, well, I can't take the credit because I had the best trainer. So please reach out to Wes. And I will link that in this episode online later. Thanks for coming, Wes.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And we'll see you on Parenting Room 101 next Friday, 12 p.m. Have a wonderful weekend, guys.